You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey, y'all. This is Mark. Welcome to episode 200. Today's episode is all about Carnival and Mardi Gras 2024. The last show was a question and answer episode. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space at hnoc.org/firstdraft. It's really well done. There's a lot of information there and some good virtual exhibits, too. From December 8, 2023 through May 10, 2024, check out their exhibit titled The Mystic Brotherhood, Fraternal Orders of New Orleans. For centuries, Freemasons, Odd Fellows, and other similar fraternal organizations have contributed to the network of benevolent and mutual aid societies that cradle New Orleans' social, cultural, and civic life. Through objects and images drawn from their collection, the new exhibition explores the sometimes hidden history of these organizations and illuminates how they helped shape today's city. Additionally, their permanent exhibit on French Quarter life is an immersive experience well worth the visit. As always, the Historic New Orleans Collection is free and somehow continues to fly under the radar, but it really shouldn't be missed. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. The most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. Liz makes the process fun and easy. Reach out to Liz at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. One of the things Liz does that's really great is after the sale, she helps really bring you into the community. In fact, I went to a party over Christmas, and everyone there had come to New Orleans through me, hearing about the podcast or listening to the podcast and then hearing about Liz and working with Liz. It was really kind of a unique experience, and they all talked about the community and the friends that they're formed through Liz. So reach out to her when you're ready to make your dream come true. While you're looking for a home to purchase, you're probably going to need to secure financing. Reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage and let him help you get everything in place. That's what we did on our refi a couple years ago, and it was as smooth as could be. We went through the same process with Tommy when we were considering purchasing a new home, and it was just as easy. Reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Bank, Gulf Coast Mortgage, and we'll put a link in the show notes. Finally, before we get to today's topic, long-term listeners are familiar with Two Chicks Walking Tours and their small group approach to public walks through the Garden District and the French Quarter. For those new to the topic, they limit the group size to half the number of guests of other companies, and frequent tour takers know that that size difference really matters. They're also experts at curating private tours, including a variety of themes such as literature through the French Quarter and Marigny Highlights Tour. The team has also traversed the CBD and the warehouse with groups discussing the city's unique development and characteristics. They've organized private tours for as little as a single guest to more than 200 people, so please reach out to them when you're ready at twochickswalkingtours.com. Use code BEYOND and get 15% off, and we'll also put a link in the show notes. So let's jump into today's topic. My guest today probably knows as much about Mardi Gras as anyone. He's published an annual Mardi Gras guide for 48 years, including the 2024 edition. Welcome to the show, Arthur. How are you?
Happy to be here, Mark.
I'm glad to have you here.
Together again, right?
Yep, together again for a little bit of inside business for our listeners. I had a human error. We had a great conversation the other day, and I did not hit record, so we're going to hopefully have as good a conversation. I wanted to welcome you, too. This is my 200th episode. So
I'm flattered. How about that? I was so happy to be a part of this landmark show, and who knew, huh?
Yes, I remember you and I talking when I first got started, and you gave me a lot of advice and said, I think it's great. I don't know how it'll turn out, and here we are 200 episodes and 8 years later.
So. Well, I had faith in you, but this is a tough market and a tough job to do. And the thing about success in this business is it's not necessarily dependent upon the quality of the product.
Right.
We knew you could do it, But can you sell it? Can you monetize it?
Can you find an audience?
Do you resonate with people? So congratulations to you.
Thank you. Well, and similarly, so you've released your 48th edition.
Yep.
Big year for you.
Yes, indeed.
I want to get into Mardi Gras, but I want to first talk about the guide a bit. And let's lead off with, you have some big news from this year.
Yes. In April, my wife and I sold the magazine to George's Media. John George's, Times-Picayune, NOLA.com, Advocate, and all the other publications they do. And it's great for us. They're doing all the heavy lifting, the ad sales, the distribution, printing, all that. And I'm getting to have fun and just run the magazine. And I'll be doing that for 2 more years,
our
50th anniversary, with an option to continue. And it's the best of all worlds. So we're very blessed, Mark.
We're really happy for you. And I think it reflects in the magazine. This year, you guys have covered a wider swath.
Yes.
It appears, and I want to get your insight on this, it looks like you've made a real effort to cover Mardi Gras and Carnival beyond New Orleans, throughout Louisiana.
We have, and that's partly driven by the fact that the Georgia's Media Group publishes newspapers in Baton Rouge and in Lafayette. So those subscribers, in addition to the New Orleans subscribers, will get a magazine delivered to their homes with a subscription on Friday, February 2nd. And we're excited about that. So we figured, if we're getting magazines, we better have some coverage of those parades. And, you know, Mardi Gras, New Orleans doesn't own it. We think that's the biggest and best. But there's Mardi Gras elsewhere and around the state and celebrated in slightly different fashions. But it's all good and it's all fun. So we've tried to expand our, I think they call it the geographic footprint.
We've definitely done that. I enjoyed, as you know, I went to college in Lafayette. So I was excited to see an article about the Coureur de Mardi Gras. Very different.
Yeah, have you ever seen it?
Because I have. I haven't. One time when
Did
I was
you?
In
Tell
Lafayette.
Tell me about it, because I'm always locked down here.
It's amazingly different, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They do have a couple of parades. They have a parade on Mardi Gras Day, but the real function is the riders.
Yeah.
So the costumes are very different, but they're elaborate.
Yeah.
They ride from house to house, and the idea is that they're collecting the ingredients to make a gumbo, which they make at the end. It's got a little bit of Skull and Bones kind of feel to it, too, because you're kind of making a lot of noise as they go to these different places, different houses or farms. There's a lot of drinking involved in it, but there's a lot of horsemanship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys, you think about you and I riding a parade, we're tethered in, we're kind of in place, we don't have to worry about much.
And you have a handler in front of you.
Yeah, correct.
Not these guys, I've seen pictures.
Correct. And, you know, they don't quite have, they have a route, but it's not like we have. It's not structured in that sense.
How do you stand up on a horse after you've been drinking for 6 hours?
I have no idea. I have a hard enough time sitting on a horse sober.
Try to get insurance for that guy, huh?
I hadn't even thought about that. But it's truly it's part of their culture, right?
Yeah.
It's really ingrained, and it's a really fun, festive time. It's totally different than what we do here.
And, you know, you mentioned No Route. It's almost analogous to the Mardi Gras Indians.
Yes.
You know, I hope they never have a route. They never have a police permit. You know, it's just not Disney. It's not Jazz Fest. I love Jazz Fest where it's orchestrated. You know, let them do their own thing their own way. And if you want to find them, that's on you.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing this for themselves and their neighbors, not for PR. And there's a charm to that, don't you think?
There is. It's one of the questions I get asked a lot from listeners and people in our community is, how do I go see the Mardi Gras Indians?
Yeah.
You know, and the answer, the answer is good luck. You know, there's uptown crews, or uptown gangs and downtown gangs. And, you know, to some degree, if you're an insider, if you're local, you can find out the big, you know, they start from the big chief's house or some of them start from bars. But there's nothing published about it because it would be impossible to publish. Yeah, they change.
I kind of like that, even though I'm in the business of disseminating information. Some things you just have to seek out.
And it gets kind of to that theme, I think, that we talked about the other day. We'll probably talk about again, is that there really is Mardi Gras for everyone. You know, there's a lot of different ways to enjoy it.
I've been doing a lot of national and a couple of international interviews this year and every year, really. And I always want to make the point, and I've been doing this before the phrase of diversity, equity, inclusion was even dreamed up, that this is the most diverse celebration on planet Earth. You know,
it really
became that way organically, not legislated, although there's been some legislation to open up membership and crews. You know, it just happens because it's right and it feels good. And if you can't find a way to participate in Mardi Gras in New Orleans and Barnes, you're not trying, because there's absolutely an experience for everyone available to you.
I also like that idea that, you know, people, at least in New Orleans, you tend to go to the same spots every year, and you have this kind of Mardi Gras family.
You do.
And it really cuts across, as you said, it cuts across racial lines,
oh,
it cuts across socioeconomic. You know, you could be on a corner with people you might really never come into contact with otherwise.
Except that once a year.
Every year. And people, you know, people notice. If you don't go to your same area, you notice. You know, I think we talked about last time Katrina had this effect of you go back and people aren't there.
And yes, and that Mardi Gras 06 after Katrina was one of the most important and emotional ones ever, for that very reason, because you went to that same corner and you didn't know if the people who weren't there were in Texas or if they drowned. You just really didn't know.
Yeah.
And it was quite a Mardi Gras when the city said, you know what, we're going to do this no matter what. And we did, and it was beautiful.
And, you know, there was a lot of criticism about should you do this? Obviously, there were blue tarps everywhere.
Yep.
And from my memory, it's probably my favorite Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Because there was just such a connection to the community.
The Tourist Commission had set up a media center in the Sheraton Hotel on the ground floor. There were 1,500 credentialed media here for the first Mardi Gras after Katrina. And I don't know how many interviews I did, certainly dozens, maybe scores. And almost everyone to a man or woman thought we were nuts. And, I mean, and not in a friendly sort of way, that, that what's wrong with you people? You know, and the message I and others tried to get across was, you know, we chose to celebrate rather than surrender. We weren't insensitive to what happened. My God, you know, some of us had lost everything. But we had to send a signal to the world that we're down, but we ain't out.
No.
And we're going to come back. And it was a half-assed Mardi Gras, I mean, in terms of quantity and quality.
Sure.
But it didn't matter.
You know, it was that act of community.
Put something on the street. And we've talked about this before, about people holding up signs instead of, hey, throw me something, mister. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. And it was special.
Yep.
But we've fully recovered from that. And I'm happy to say now we've fully recovered from COVID.
Yep.
This 2024 Mardi Gras will be bigger and I think better than anything we've had before.
Yeah, and we have lots to talk about there. One point I did want to hit about the guide, and you highlighted it on the cover. It's the 325th anniversary of Mardi Gras.
It is
in Louisiana.
And people get a little confused about that, and there's, you know, a fight between Mobile and New Orleans who had what first. But one indisputable fact: the word Mardi Gras came to North America March 3rd, 1699, 325 years ago. French Canadian explorer coming up the Mississippi River knew it was Fat Tuesday back home, and where he landed, he named that Pointe du Mardi Gras and the waterway in front of it Bayou Mardi Gras. This is 19 years before New Orleans is founded, but it certainly was in Louisiana and not Alabama.
Yeah, I think that's one thing we, Mobile can sort of take that. We did an episode once about the comparison between Mobile and New Orleans. And again, like spreading out across Louisiana, it's interesting to see what they do.
Yep.
I certainly admire their pride
in having parades. It's all fun, this competition back and forth. There's, you know, you have to define what is Mardi Gras. Is it a parade? Is it a party? When is it? How long it lasts? But there is no question that our first official Mardi Gras parade, February 24th, 1857, Mr. Crew of Comus, was founded by six members from Mobile. We used Mobile's floats and costumes, but their parades were on New Year's Eve until after the Civil War. Our parades were on Fat Tuesday. So, you know, I jokingly like to say they had it first, but we told them where to put it. But, I mean, really, it's all in fun, and I've got a lot of friends there, and their celebration, certainly, it's smaller than ours by design. But that doesn't mean it's not good. And I like the competition.
I do, too. I would love to see it, but I don't know that I could give up ours
there
to go do it.
I'd like to go to Rio. I've been trying to get Channel 8 to send me for years, but they won't let me because I have to work here.
Fair enough. So you mentioned, you know, as we look at Carnival or Mardi Gras 2024, we can truly say we're past COVID, at least in terms of the impact on Mardi Gras. We're going to have a full schedule, I think, bigger than ever.
Bigger than ever. More parades and bigger parades. Now, that's not to say we haven't lost a couple here and there, but that happens anyway. I think the quantity and quality has never been better. There's a crew of Mad Hatters in Metairie, a relatively new parade, and they will have the largest presentation in the history of Jefferson Parish Mardi Gras this year. 38 floats, 132 units, the Mad Hatters.
Wow.
Yeah, cool, huh?
And when do they parade?
They parade on the first Saturday night of the season.
Okay.
Which I think is February 3rd. Let me check
right.
The Mardi Gras. That's why we published this thing, you know. Yes, the 3rd, February 3rd, Saturday night in Metairie.
Yeah, so that's great for Jefferson Parish and
it really is.
To get that back.
And they parade in there. Where Caesar used to parade, which was arguably the biggest and best parade then. So it's nice to see that.
One of the other things you talk about in the guide, and you do this every year, we have several parades this year celebrating big anniversaries.
Indeed, and these are former neighborhood parades. Mm-hmm. Okeanos, their 75th, Mid-City, their 90th, and Carrollton, their 100th. And these parades once existed exclusively in neighborhoods, then eventually went downtown, uptown, and now they're all on the standard uptown parade route. And, you know, to last that long is a testament to leadership and stability, and I'm looking forward to all three of them.
Yeah, I miss the neighborhood routes, and one of the big challenges last year was right up to the 11th hour, we didn't know what routes parades were going to be on.
Yeah, and thankfully this year that's all been put to rest early on, and I'm so glad about that, but I still miss the neighborhood routes.
I do too.
You know, we've talked about this before, but when you were in the Brother Martin Band and mm-hmm. I was a band director, we'd march in neighborhood parades in Gentilly near Brother Martin,
yep.
Pandora, Hercules, New Orleans East. You had Pontchartrain, Minerva, and Celine. All those parades are gone except Pontchartrain, which of course was moved downtown.
Right.
But there was something charming about just being in your neighborhood.
Very much so. And they were easy and I remember as a kid when we weren't marching, you could go catch the parade two or three times because it was easy to do that.
It was a whole lot of fun. But, you know, Mardi Gras evolves and the standard route is very good for police and for spectators. You know where to go, where you're going to park, how you get in, how you get out. But it's a lot harder now to catch three or four parades in one night.
It is.
You just kind of get locked in.
Yeah. The other thing, though, about coming back to the route is last year we had shortened routes. We had some, again, last minute. We've talked in the past about Toth.
Yep.
Toth is very much, and I'll let you explain it, very much rooted in its community. And
yes,
didn't know until the very, like almost hours before, if they were going to be able to, what they were going to be able to do.
Yeah. And that's not just a matter of convenience for Toth. That's their mission mm-hmm. to parade past. They're called the crew of shut-ins because they parade past institutions where people can't get out. You know,
right.
So the parade comes to them. And it's a beautiful thing. And I'm so glad that not only they have the route back, but we know it early enough to plan for it.
Yeah, and people, you know, they call it Toth Sunday, at least uptown in that neighborhood, and people take great pride in that.
Indeed, they do.
You know, there's all kinds of house parties, and you see bands and on front porches and all of that stuff. It's very much a celebration.
And it's a neighborhood route, and, you know, now we've got about a dozen parades that are back to starting on Jefferson Magazine,
mm-hmm.
and that's as close as we've gotten back to neighborhood parades that stretch along Magazine Street. I think it's about a 13-block stretch, and it's just really special. And then, of course, they turn on Napoleon and St. Charles down to Canal Street.
Right.
So it's kind of like a mix of neighborhood and regular parade routes, you know?
Well, and I still have, you know, relatively young kids. They're 12 years old. They won't want to be with mom and dad much longer on the parade routes. But that part, the Jefferson to Magazine up to Napoleon, that part's really family-friendly.
Oh, it is.
And it's intimate because the streets are narrow. And so that causes some problems for the organizations, you know, with the height and
the
trees. But you're very, very close to the floats. It's very family-friendly. Lots of parade ladders.
No barricades. And, it's a wonderful part of the celebration. I look forward to catching parades. The biggest problem, of course, other than finding a bathroom, is parking.
Yeah.
It's a neighborhood. People live there. And I've embarrassed to say I got a parking ticket and I ought to know better, but the meter maids are very effective.
Yes. They know a market when they do.
Captive audience.
You know, one more thing on the routes. If you could explain to people what the challenge was and sort of what the solution is that has enabled us to get back to the more traditional route.
Well, the challenge is the lack of police.
Mm.
And the solution is importing outside police departments from around the state. And Sheriff Hudson has done a great job with the Sheriff's Department, allowing those deputies to help, and that really saved Carnival last year. The program has been tweaked and expanded a bit this year, but I think it's permanent now.
Good.
And I think this model will be used not just for Mardi Gras in the future, but things like the Essence Festival,
mm-hmm.
certainly the Super Bowl next year, you know, that we need help.
Yeah.
And help is available. It has to be carefully orchestrated, but it can be done and has been done. And Mardi Gras, once again, will serve as a model for other big events.
Yeah, and it worked well last year.
It did. It very much did. And I saw a lot of people, and I was one of them, going up to police with other parishes, you know, tangible Howard badge on, hey man, thanks for this. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. We're enjoying this. And you almost become friends.
Yeah.
It's like strike up a conversation. But there's a lot of gratitude people felt and expressed.
Yeah. Well, and other big news. So one of the other concerns besides Toth was Endymion. Mm-hmm. Endymion arguably has a little bit of a neighborhood route because yes. they start in mid-city.
Yep.
And so now I understand that they're good to go. They're going to be able to stay on that route.
Permanent, and that was in doubt until late last year. They will end at the convention center for mm-hmm. one more year because of renovations to the dome for the Super Bowl. They'll be back in the dome in 25. And they were given permission to extend their route a little bit so they can toast at Gallier Hall. Last year they couldn't do that.
Right.
So that's good. I mean, you know, it's all good news as far as we know. Now, the one thing we don't know about is the weather. We're hoping to get all the bad weather out. I did a little research and found out that the last four times Fat Tuesday's fallen on February 3rd, no rain. Low of 56, high of 73. I mean, that's about perfect.
Yes.
If we can roll the dice and get that one more time, I'll be a happy man.
And for you and I who ride on Mardi Gras Day, yes. that's a big deal.
Oh, it certainly is. You know, you can deal with cold, you can deal with heat, but man, when you get wet, it's no fun.
No. 54 to 74 would be about perfect.
Oh, I'll take it in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention, well, two things about Endymion is one, we lost the longtime captain, really the force behind Endymion.
Yeah. Ed Munez, longest reigning captain in carnival history and founder of Endymion. Ed died in April. And his able assistant, Dan Kelly, is now riding as captain, and there'll be special tributes to him in the parade that incidentally is on his birthday.
Oh.
So how cool is that? And Ed was a force of nature. You know,
he's
an innovator, had this drive to always, you know, after a parade, what didn't work? What can we do better? Don't tell me how good it was. Tell me where. And that was the way he operated.
Yeah.
How can we make it better for the people?
And they're going to honor him, right? So the captain won't ride on the float.
Right, right. The captain will ride on a horse. The captain's float will be called the founder's float, and it'll always be dedicated to Ed. And he was a very, very special man. I had the pleasure of working with him, for years, but we published the first crew history book my company published was for Endymion's 25th anniversary in 1991. And I'll never forget going to his home and saying, you know, I'm sure you have an archivist or a historian or a scrapbook or something. You know, show me your stuff. And he said, what stuff? I said, well, certainly you saved. he said, no. I said, how could you not save, like, the script for the ball and the parade?
Right.
He said, and I'll never forget this. He said, Arthur, we didn't know what we were doing was important.
Mm.
We're just having fun. We never dreamed that this one day we'll look back and say, man, I wish I had saved it. You know? So a lot of their history was gone.
Mm.
So we had to find 16-millimeter film and get it transferred to that time to VHS tapes to get like the float titles in each parade.
Wow.
There was no record of it. I mean, how can you not know what floats were in the 1969 parade? At one time, the newspaper would publish that, but then they stopped doing it.
Right.
So there was no physical record of how many floats, what the titles were. So we had to look at film and get a legal pad out and stop the projector. I mean, it was crazy, but we didn't know what we were doing was so important.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And Endymion has become such a force in Mardi Gras. For many people, it is Mardi Gras.
Yeah. The largest male parade, Iris has eclipsed them. Iris has 3,600 members, Endymion about 3,450. But they put on that wonderful extravaganza.
Yeah.
They have Sting and Flo Rida for their entertainment this year. So the convention center will be sold out. I mean, who does that? Endymion does that.
Well, and let's talk about that a little bit. For people that maybe don't know, there's a couple crews. Endymion does the largest. Mm-hmm. But this extravaganza, it's an opportunity to see Mardi Gras again in a different light.
Yep.
Go to the Superdome. Maybe you can explain to people what that experience is like.
Yeah, well, we have three parades that end inside buildings. The Bacchus and Orpheus in the Convention Center, and Endymion too this year. Endymion's normally in the dome. So the parade actually ends inside a closed facility where there's, you know, 6 hours of entertainment. Tickets are available, very pricey.
Yep.
And one of the strangest things about it is you have to dress in formal wear, but there you are, holding a, dragging an ice chest, well, ice chest right. in with your food. But it's wonderful to be able to see the parade. I mean, you don't have to worry about weather because
no.
you're inside. all of the riders will save throws to distribute there, and it's, you know, you people bring garbage bags to fill up with the throws they're going to get inside these facilities, and it's just a unique part of Carnival.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. We'll talk a little bit later about the balls, but for most people, they don't have access to the balls, and so you can go to the Extravaganza, or you can go to the Bacchus or Endymion's Orpheus celebrations. You get the experience of dressing up in, you know, ball gowns and tuxedos, but you also get the experience of catching throws right off the floats. Yeah. And as you said, riders, having done that before myself, riders save things for that.
Yeah.
And those people get pummeled.
It's special. Yeah. And we should mention the Zulu organization,
which
was Parades Fat Tuesday morning, has a ball the Friday night before in the convention center. And it's a spectacular thing, probably 15,000 people. No parade, but it's really something to see. Zulu has more than 36 maids each year, and they're all presented, all dressed beautifully. It's quite an event.
And you told me a story last time, I'd ask you to repeat it, about the gumbo at Zulu.
Yeah. The first time I attended a Zulu ball, people bring home-cooked food. I mean, it's an event that you can have catered and you can pay, but most people bring food.
Yeah.
And there were three elderly grandmother-type African-American women who all had brought gumbo. And they each wanted to feed me. And it was like, oh, that gumbo ain't no good. Try this. That's pretty good. Huh? Mine's better than her. And we had like this fun fight. Who had the best gumbo? And I mean, this was some of the best food I've ever eaten at the Zulu Ball.
Yeah.
And again, a slice of New Orleans that a lot of people don't know about. And I can't imagine where this happens anyplace else, where people are fighting over who can feed you free best gumbo, huh?
Right.
I loved it all.
Yeah, only in New Orleans. Yeah, so, you know, that's something I would encourage people. If you've never done it, it is pricey. You buy the tickets. But like you said, the entertainment is top-notch, world-class entertainment.
It is. There's another funny story about a Zulu ball. When I was working for Channel 6, we were covering the ball. And I had a media pass that I forgot at the station. I show up at the ball. And the gentleman at the door, Arthur, how you doing, babe? Fine. Can I take a picture? Yeah. Sign my magazine. Yeah. He says, you got your ticket? Huh? I said, man, I don't. I left. He says, I can't let you in. I said, man, I'm on the air in 20 minutes. He says, love you, brother, but I can't let you in. No ticket. No. I said, man, you're kidding. And I wasn't playing, do you know who I am? It's just, you know who I am, and I've got to go to work. Luckily, a Zulu member passed who had an extra ticket, and he gave it to me. But you know, there was something neat about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have rules, and I don't care who you are, you know, we have rules. And I didn't get mad. I thought it was kind of funny, but love me, but where's your ticket, man?
That seems like also another only in New Orleans thing.
Yeah.
But you're right. There's a method to the whole thing.
There have been stories about big-name Hollywood celebrities coming to a ball in a business suit. Where's your tuxedo? I have no tuxedo. Well, you ain't coming in. You kidding. And they did play. You know who I am? Yeah, and you ain't coming in.
Right. And so that's a good segue. I want to get back to the parades, but that's a good segue to talk about the balls. Let's, for maybe people that don't know what they are, let's talk just a little bit about what a ball is and what's entailed in it.
Well, it's the private side of Carnival, and don't call them tickets. You get invitations if you're lucky enough to know a member who invites you. And people do have screening committees that want to know who's coming. And in some of the older groups, the emphasis is not upon how many people attend, but who's lucky enough to be invited, you know. And the older organizations, let me back up. A format at all balls is to present the royalty, the king, queen, the dukes, maids, courts, and all. And there's a grand march, and then there's general dancing. And, you know, there's a formal affairs. You get dressed up to watch other people have fun. But how the royalty is selected in the older organizations, it's tied to the debutante season. So the queen and the maids will all be deb. And that's for probably about half of the organizations that still do traditional balls.
Mm-hmm.
And there's dancing. And it's a very kind of a subdued private celebration. But it's fun if you're a member of that group. In many groups, or several groups, the king's name is never made public.
Right.
So the members know who the king is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, the good news is I'm king, the bad news is I can't tell anybody. Your picture's in the paper? Yeah, but you got a mask on. And that's, again, kind of the charm, the secrecy, the mystique of not everybody has to know everything. This is what we do. And if you're lucky enough to be invited, that's cool. But if you don't get it, see you later.
Yeah.
That's cool, too.
Yeah, and the invitations are works of art. We're sitting in your living room. You have a very old one right there over my shoulder.
Yeah, I collect Mardi Gras memorabilia. We forgot to think, my oldest invitation is the 1858 Comus ball, the second ball. And a lot of these things they're die-cut invitations that fold out and were done in Paris and shipped here. You get to around World War I and the invitations became very plain. Last 20 years or so, the organizations have gone back to these elaborate invitations. And now with digital printing and all, it's a lot easier to replicate these old die-cut invitations. So there's a new golden age of printed Mardi Gras memorabilia.
Yeah, I've been fortunate the last couple of years to get invited to some of the balls, and they're frame-worthy.
Oh, they are.
You know, they really are truly amazing.
They're works of art. They really are.
And to your point, you need that admit. Without the proper attire,
yep.
And it's formal. So some are black tie, some are tails.
Yep.
The women have to wear floor-length gowns, yep. and white leather gloves.
And you better have an admit card. You have an invitation, and that's something you save and maybe frame, but then you have a card with your name on it, non-transferable, and these organizations take it very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been stories of people trying to crash these events. It hardly ever happens.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the grandest of that is our Mardi Gras night, the meeting of the courts of Rex and Comus. It's on WYS, which you've been a part of for many years, here and there. But for me, I mean, it is the symbolic ending of Carnival.
It is. And that coverage is streamed worldwide on WYS. And it's a beautiful traditional event. This is how Carnival ends.
It's worth staying up to see it.
It is. It is at least once. And I normally go to the ball. Last year I was just so tired after the Rex ride that day that I crashed. But I'm hoping to attend this year. And it's the same. It's traditional. But there's still something special, even though you've seen it before.
It is.
Like, we've been doing this since the 1870s. How many places on planet Earth are there that we're doing the same thing we did 150 years ago? You know, why do we do that? You know, because we choose to. We honor our past, we honor our culture, we honor our traditions.
Yeah. I mean, there's two things that always, when I think about the end of Mardi Gras, I think about the meeting of the courts, watching it on TV, having had the honor to go last year and see that in person. And then the second thing that happens is the horses come down Bourbon Street.
Yep. The police chief will be on the lead horse and big bullhorn saying, Mardi Gras over, go home. But nobody goes home. They leave until the police pass and they, you know, go into barrooms and come back out. But the same people you see drinking on Fat Tuesday, you see at the St. Louis Cathedral, Ash Wednesday, getting ashes. You know, it's true.
Yeah, really.
It's still connected to the Catholic Church.
Yeah, it's, we honor our traditions here. We value our traditions here, and that's part of it. One of the things I want to talk about is the growth in Mardi Gras, and particularly in the days leading up to Carnival. Obviously, parades start it's not entirely true. Parades start on 12th night, and then we have a little bit of a lull sitting where we're sitting now around the 23rd, 24th of January. I think there's a couple little parades. There's a couple of parades this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But then about 12 days before, the two weekends before Mardi Gras Day, we have the parade calendar in
place. Exactly, the official parade calendar. And those parades are controlled by a specific Mardi Gras ordinance that has a lot of restrictions as to what you can throw, what your themes can be. The earlier parades, there are no restrictions. So sometimes you'll see more satire, more risque themes, throws. And that's fine as a part, a place for that, but not within the main parade season.
Yeah. And in the main parade season has really gotten stacked. So on almost every night, we have multiple parades back to back.
Yeah. And that's both good and bad. You know, you have too much of a good thing to where by the time the third parade rolls, there's fatigue and people say, you know, I'm going home.
Yeah.
And that's sad for the riders who have spent money to parade, to, you know, dues, throws. Hey, there's nobody here. So NLPD is making a concerted effort to try to get the parades to move more swiftly within reason and to have fewer auxiliary units within the parades. You don't need 100 dance groups in a parade.
Yeah.
You know, five will be fine. Thank you.
That's been both a good thing post-Katrina, especially with the coming of Muses.
Mm-hmm.
We should talk about that. But the maybe too much of a good thing. But those organizations, and what we're talking about is those marching organizations. You learn a dance number or two, and you get an opportunity to participate in the parade as a marching unit. It used to be in New Orleans, all you had were the high bands.
High school bands. Now it's much more than that. And Muses deserves a lot of credit for that when they formed first parade in 2000. They opened up the opportunity for people who weren't 18 years old to you know, to march.
Right.
So a lot of middle-aged women who weren't necessarily the greatest shape said, you know, hey, I want to perform too. So Muses said, come on down. And they started that, and it's exploded.
Yeah, it really has. And you have the popularity of the 6/10 Stompers.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an all-male group, sort of a parody. Really came out of the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And tying into a local news reporter, and sports personality, Buddy Deliberto, really celebrating his love of the Saints and when the Saints won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But you didn't used to have that. So you had high school bands, and then you had some female-only marching groups, and then you had this kind of parody of it with all-male marching group.
They say, ordinary men with extraordinary moves. That's the Sixth Stompers logo.
And I think that sums them up very well.
Oh, it does. And again, but it's just, it's opened up, you know, more participation from more people. And I think it's wonderful. You know, it's an organic growth. That's the thing about Mardi Gras, is that things just happen. They're not legislated. You know, the city can't say, hey, you need four of the ladies. No. We're going to tell you what's going to happen.
Right.
And as it does, we'll incorporate it. But it's not legislated. It's what we do.
And the creativity of it. You know, there's so many groups. Some are more risque than others. Yeah. Some are, you know, it kind of runs the full range. You have the, I forget what they're called, the Elvi.
Oh, yeah, rolling Elvi on little scooters. That's fun. You know, there's another part of Mardi Gras that's really grown recently, and that's the philanthropic effort of a lot of these crews that are doing more than just parading. Hermes has something called, it's called After the Parade or something, where they do things for the community in addition to parading. Rex leads the way with their pro bono Publico Foundation. They've given away more than $14 million since Katrina to public schools. And that's not why we do Mardi Gras, but it's a nice side benefit.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, because several organizations do that. They do a lot of work throughout the year.
They do.
That it goes unseen, largely.
Zulu's been doing that for decades without much publicity. I mean, 365, they operate, do a lot of Toys for Tots, Thanksgiving baskets, sickle cell anemia programs to fight that dreaded disease. And, you know, a neat thing about this, too, is it's not done for publicity. Hey, look at what we do. You know,
right.
They do it. And then if you ask them about it, they, we do that. But it's not like, look at us, pin a rose on me.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the heart.
Yeah. I want to get back to Muses, because I think the impact, one of the things we should say is that for many years, Mardi Gras organizations were segregated by gender, and they still are. There are male-only parades and female-only parades. There are parades that are co-ed.
Co-ed, yep.
So there really is something. If you're a couple, you want to ride together. We've done that in Orpheus, for instance. But Muses became this enormous, the largest organization, I think, right?
Well, at one time, not anymore, but it's still large, more
but
than 1,000.
Really
members.
Large,
yeah.
All-female organization.
Yep. Yep.
We should mention our friend Margaret Orr is going to be celebrated this year.
Yep, and she will be the honorary muse and much deserved.
Yeah, so Margaret Orr, for people not locally, she is a weather meteorologist.
Yep.
There's nothing I could say that would overstate the impact she has on the New Orleans area and how beloved she is.
She is. She started really the Barkas Parade, and she's just an extraordinary woman. I was at a Rex Media luncheon a few days ago, and she was honored there as an honorary muse. It's kind of strange, Rex
right.
acknowledging that. And she really teared up and said, this is the highest honor I've ever had, because, again, it's from the heart.
Yeah.
It's the community recognizing her.
Yeah.
And made it a point to just say how special this city is, that people, you know, along the parade route, whether you're a celebrity, which she is, or not. Hey, darling, you need some chicken? You need to use a potty? I mean, people just do this at Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
People you don't know open their homes and hearts to you. And it's not Chamber of Commerce speech. It's true. You've seen it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've seen it every year.
Absolutely. You know, again, getting back to that, going to the same corner, you look out for people, you share food with people, you look out for the kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the whole it takes a village thing is true at Mardi Gras.
It definitely is. It definitely is. The other thing, one of the other impacts with Muses is it's really raised up some of the other female organizations, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, not just female organizations, but the whole idea of signature throws. You pretty much had the Zulu coconut forever until the Muses shoe. Then every other organization, this is catching steam. What can we come up with? And probably a dozen crews have done that now, and people really seek out those. We call them throws, but in most cases, they're handed out because they're too heavy that you could hurt somebody if you tossed them.
Right.
But it's become a big industry now, and again, these things just develop. You know, they're not orchestrated or legislated. It's, hey, I like that. Mm-hmm. What can we do? You know, so the creativity, the artistry, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, you talk about there's a crew that hands out shrimp boots that are decorated.
Carrollton.
Iris does the sunglasses.
Yep.
And I wanted to talk about Iris. They, a year or two ago, celebrated their 100th anniversary.
Correct.
And that's an organization, again, you and I have talked about before. I think it's fair to say it was largely comprised of older women.
Indeed.
And it was an okay parade. That's me saying it, not you. But yep. It was an okay parade, but it has exploded in the last 5 or 10 years.
Under it's new leadership of the fourth captain in 100 years.
Wow.
And kind of just blown the doors off of it. The membership's now more than 3,600. Kern Studios is doing the floats now. And it's just an enormous parade and shows no signs of letting up. You know, they have a waiting list of people who want to get in. So the enthusiasm of youth, you know, is really driven it to numbers we've never seen before in a female organization.
It's become one of my favorite parades. It's a huge parade.
Oh, it is. It is.
And it's on a day where you have several parades. I think you've talked about.
Yeah, we've got Tux first, then Iris, and then Endymion, all on Canal Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably, I know Endymion, if you untied all the tandem floats, it's 80 floats.
Wow.
And I would imagine Iris would be in the 60s and Tux in the 50s. So, you know, I don't know. My math's not that good. But a couple of hundred floats will pass you if you get your lawn chair and get a spot someplace on Canal. I mean, that's enormous.
It is. I mean, that's really probably bigger than Mardi Gras Day with the truck floats.
Oh, absolutely it is. It absolutely is, yeah. And the crowds are larger than Fat Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's sad that a lot of people leave before Fat Tuesday. They come for that big weekend and go home. And that, to me, they're missing an important part of Cornwall. You don't have to be big to be good. And that Monday night duo of Proteus from the 1800s and Orpheus from 2000s, you know, or 1990s, I guess. And then Zulu and Rex and the trucks on Fat Tuesday. You know, how can you miss that? But some people do.
My mom believes it's not carnival until she's seen the Captain of Rex come down the street.
Oh, on a horse. Yeah, that's a special moment.
You know, so. But you mentioned just now, it made me think of Monday night.
Yeah.
So we have this real, we have this blend of really old carnival crews and newer, although Orpheus is 20-something years old.
Yeah.
But that's a really neat Monday night. You get to see these old horse-drawn, or not horse-drawn, but carriages that are based on wooden wagon wheels.
Yep.
And they shimmer, and it's very different. And then set against the super crew of Orpheus. Really a neat duo.
The old and the new, and I think it's the most special night of Carnival. It really is. And then, yeah, it used to be a night of people got ready for the next day. But
right.
Now you've got the Zulu Festival and Lundegraw Festival at Waldenburg Park. You've got the landing of Rex at Spanish Plaza. So Lundegraw is kind of like January 6th, the opening of the carnival season. It used to be a sleepy time with almost nothing happening. Now it's an explosion of events.
Yeah, it really is. And that's one. If you've been to Mardi Gras and left early, or been to carnival, been to parades and not stayed, that alone is worth it.
It really is.
And really, that split. I mean, we're talking about it. But if you could talk for a minute about, as I'm thinking about Proteus, some of these old crews are using wagons that go back to the 1800s.
Yes. In fact, for NOLA.com, we did a little feature that will air during the Proteus Parade about those wooden wheels and how there's a gentleman in Texas who comes in and rehabs the wheels each year because sitting there with float bodies on them for a whole year, they crack and they need to be refurbished. And you can't Google, you know, where's a wheelwright in New Orleans. But it's a special parade, and the artistry is just phenomenal.
Yeah, and so even in that week before, you get these nights where you have this real mix of new and old.
Yep.
You really can see, what is it that rolls before Muses? Is it Druids that night?
We've got Babylon and Chaos before
Babylon
Muses.
And Chaos.
And Babylon's a crew from the 30s. Chaos uses the old Momus floats from the 1880s. A lot of political satire, equal opportunity offenders. They make everybody mad.
Right.
And of course, Friday night, you've got Détard, also satirical, which follows Hermes, a parade in the 30s, and then Morpheus, which is a real comer of a parade in terms of everything, quality and quantity. Its problem is it's the third parade.
And yeah, a lot of people it gets miss late. It,
first class organization.
Yeah, and that's one that I often refer out of towners that are looking to ride.
Yep.
That's a good one because, again, it's co-ed.
Co-ed, yep.
So you can ride as, we've done that as well. You can ride as a couple.
Yeah.
The one downside is it's late. So hopefully with some of the improvements the city's putting in place, it'll get kicked off a little sooner.
Yeah.
Because it's a long night. If you're out there with even if you're not, but if you're out there with kids, you know, we have a hard time making it to the third parade.
Sure. No, I know. And that's one of the complaints. But I think we're working towards a solution there. I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so, too. You know, what are you excited about this year?
I think the fact that it should be a normal Mardi Gras. You know, we're not waiting for somebody to tell us what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unique for the last 3 years. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, really.
It's been tough.
This looks like a normal Mardi Gras. And normal is good.
Yeah.
I mean, normal is special enough. You know, what's normal? Abby normal, right?
can you talk about what the economic impact is of Mardi Gras?
Yeah, well, we've always known it brought a lot of money to the city. Professor Tony Weiss of Tulane University just released an economic impact study on January 6th that said Mardi Gras in 2023 generated $890 million to the economy. And
that's
for
amazing.
Every dollar the city spent, it got $268 back.
So wow.
That's a wonderful, wonderful position to be in.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tremendous amount of money. You think about what city or community wouldn't want that deal, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And we get it every year for free. We don't have to compete for it like you would for an Olympics or
Super Bowl.
You know, it's not like Disney where it's controlled with rights to this and official that. No, it belongs to everybody.
Yeah. One thing you said a minute ago, I wanted to pull the thread on. You mentioned in your book, in your guide, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. There's all these industries, and you have a really great article this year about some of the people that function behind the scenes and some of the things they do.
Yeah, it's the part that you don't see about Mardi Gras is an enormous industry, first of all. And one of the strange things is you can work all year for it and a parade could get rained out. And it's and all that effort for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, you can't just save it for next year.
Sure.
So there are just so many movers and shakers, from costumers to float builders to people who design beads. And it's in spite of this new economic impact study, the authors of which acknowledge, just we can't measure it all. It's immeasurable. You know, there's so many sub-industries here. A lot of them are cash industries. That income is not voluntarily reported for many, many reasons.
Sure.
You can use your imagination. But it's a big, big business. And when Mardi Gras was canceled, like for COVID, the hurt that spread around the community was enormous. Not just the emotional thing, we got no Mardi Gras, got no money if your income depended upon this. You know, I've had king cake bakers tell me they could shut down for 11 months out the year and just do king cakes and make enough money for the rest of the year.
Wow.
It's expenses that eat them up. All the profits in king cakes. So if Mardi Gras canceled, now we still had king cakes when Mardi Gras
canceled.
Yeah,
we did.
But you understand.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a big
in my
deal.
Little business, we decided to print a magazine in spite of COVID, and we did okay because I thought it was important to keep it going, but we didn't do well.
Sure.
Who could? I mean, you're writing a program to event that ain't there no more, like we say in New Orleans. It's big business, but more than that for the city, it's, you know, this is who we are.
Yeah. Two trends I wanted to touch on were king cakes and sort of the environmental impact of Mardi Gras, but we'll start with the king cakes. You know, one of the things, there's more king cakes than there's ever been.
Oh, my God.
We have the King Cake Hub by our good friend who's since passed on, Will Samuels.
Yep.
His wife, Jennifer, has continued it.
Well,
but it's a really neat concept. Before the King Cake Hub, you would have to go to an individual bakery like Haydel's or Randazzo's or whatever your favorite is and get a king cake from them. But the Hub is just what it says. They bring in king cakes from, gosh, maybe 30 bakeries every morning. You can go to one or two sites they have, and you can pick up multiple king cakes.
Yeah. It's really neat. It's a brilliant idea, and there have never been more bakers participating or a greater variety of king cakes.
Yeah.
And there again, you can do your thing. You know, you don't need to ask somebody permission. You know, put out a new popcorn king cake. If it sells, good. If it doesn't, do something else. But I love, and I know we've talked about this before, you know, it's capitalism at its best. If you're an entrepreneur and you have an idea, go do it. You don't need permission. It'll either work or it won't.
Yeah,
but nobody can stop you. You know, the city could stop a parade, but it can't make people parade, and it can't make people be artistic or creative. And that's one of the many neat things about Carnival.
Yeah, I mean, and there are king cakes. Longtime New Orleanians remember the traditional McKenzie's king cake, which was sort of a brioche dough with some cinnamon in it. Pretty basic, really.
Yep.
There are bakeries today that create their version of that. But there's bakeries with all kinds of ingredients.
Oh, yeah.
You can get savory king cakes. You can get sweet king cakes.
Boudin.
You can get a boudin king cake.
I cannot do, thank you.
It's different, but it's worth trying.
Pineapple, come on.
I saw Dong Phong this year has a strawberry-filled king cake.
Yep.
Again, that's one. That's a Vietnamese bakery out in New Orleans East that has arguably become the most popular king cake.
Yep.
People wait in line for that king cake, and they've expanded a little bit. And
yes.
So that's been great for them. And you know, again, more diversity in Carnival.
Something for everybody.
The other trend I wanted you to talk about that we talked about several years ago was this idea of environmental impact and throws. And I know that you were very kind of dubious about how this was going to go.
Yeah, I was. And I think I was wrong, you know. But I wasn't completely wrong. What I said was that it's all about money, and that if you can buy $100 worth of things and it's 1,000 items, you're more likely to do that than if they're $10 a piece and you have 10 items to throw. Same $100, but a different experience. But what I didn't count on is the public starting to demand more environmentally friendly and crew logo merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want the cheap stuff anymore. It stays on the ground. So riders have had to say, I'll spend the same amount of money, but I'm going to get fewer but better throws.
Yeah.
And everybody wants something like a signature throw or something with a logo on it saying I was at that parade.
Mm-hmm.
If it's beads without anything on it, they stay on the ground.
Yeah.
And so it's a new trend, and I think it's a good one. The city has a new program called Recycled That, where there are going to be 6 locations along the St. Charles Parade route where you can throw the things that you don't want that you've caught off the floats. And that's good.
Yeah, it is. In fact, I had a conversation with one of my daughters last night, and she said, I'm excited about going to Mardi Gras, but I don't want to keep all the stuff that
exactly.
we catch. And so, you know, there's a program for that now to recycle. And to your point, the signature beads, Rex, for instance, has a different bead for every float.
Yep.
They have their signature Rex beads, but they have a different bead for every float. And you and I both have experienced people collect those.
They come up. And it's like they're shopping at Walmart. I want 2 of these, 3 of those, 5 of that, you know. And
you get what you get.
You wait a minute.
Right. But it has changed in a way.
Oh, it has.
You know, I think there was this push early on to make recyclable beads in terms of biodegradable. And that maybe hasn't taken off. But this idea of people are collecting these things so they're keeping them, that has a positive impact on the environment.
It does.
And it's changed the behavior of the crews, without a doubt.
It has. There's no question about it. But who knows what's going to be next?
Right. You know? Which is exciting.
It is.
I think that's one of the things when your magazine comes out every year, I think about we're very rooted in the past, but it's also ever evolving and changing.
And we don't know where it's headed next.
Yeah.
But I don't see it ever backing down. You know, I don't know if we're going to have many more parades, but quality can improve and innovative throws and float design. You know, I'd love to be here in 50 years, but I won't.
Well, you've contributed quite a bit to Mardi Gras and to its continuation. Thank you, Arthur, for being with me today.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. I'm sorry we had to do it twice, but
it's okay.
Good for me. I enjoy the time with you. I want to also thank our sponsors, the Historic New Orleans Collection, Liz Wood, Tommy Manzella, Two Chicks Walking Tours, and our Patreon supporters. And by the way, if you're a Patreon supporter at the $10 level or higher, in your mailbox any day is a copy of Arthur Hardy's 48th Mardi Gras Guide. We've sent that to you as a little lanyard, a way of saying thank you. We'll put links in the show notes over at beyondbourbonst.com/200. And with that, I'm going to hand it off to my daughters to close us out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.